Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
You're listening to Toledo Works, a co-production of WGTE Public Media and the Toledo Free Press. I'm Jaden Jefferson, your host this hour, and a reporter for the Free Press who primarily covers politics and government. On this week's show, we're discussing how our elections work with the people who make them work. 2026 is, of course, a midterm election year in which congressional representatives, Senate candidates, and here in Ohio, as well as a number of other states, gubernatorial candidates are on the ballot. But to make it so that each of us has the opportunity to be heard in these crucial races, local Board of Election officials require civilian help. And to discuss that, I'm joined first by Lucas County Board of Elections Director, Livier Scott. Thanks for coming on Toledo Works.
Thanks for inviting me.
Poll workers, obviously, they are sometimes kind of forgotten in this process, but they are the people who are really the backbone of the elections process. And so kind of explain how Lucas County approaches recruiting poll workers.
Well, as you stated, they are the backbone of elections. They are the face of elections on election day. We happen to have in Lucas County 82 polling locations, and every one of those polling locations must be staffed with Democrats, declared Democrats, declared Republicans, and then we can also use some people who are non-affiliated as long as we have the minimum numbers that we need for declared people. So out of the 82 polling locations that we do utilize, we only have maybe three polling locations that have one precinct. So in those places, you have to have four precinct election officials. And then some of the larger locations, such as Waite, Stark, where they have a lot of precincts, we can use anywhere between 24 to 30 PEOs. And I use PEOs as precinct election officials. That's the official term. So it is synonymous with poll workers. That's what most people are used to hearing. But, you know, so the amount of poll workers that we use in each precinct stays the same, but it varies depending on how many precincts are within each polling location.
And those are just significant numbers that are needed. And so is it a challenge just to fill every one of those positions?
It is a challenge. Over the years, like I said, I've been there 22 years now. It'll be 22 years actually in a few weeks. But I've definitely have seen, you know, the ebbs and flows. You know, people do tend to volunteer more. And I'd say volunteer very loosely because we do pay these people. So nothing's free. So you are paid to be a precinct election official. But during, like, say, what people believe are such as a presidential election, during a presidential election, I tend to have more people willing to work. But I also tend to have higher turnout during those times. During municipal elections or odd year elections, our recruitment efforts have to be doubled or tripled for whatever reason. Some people either don't know it's an election, don't think that that election is as important as the other ones. So it not only affects the number of people who show up to vote, it affects the number of people who are willing to work.
And I definitely want to discuss that because we saw in Lucas County significant turnout for the presidential election, and that's true of many other counties in the state of Ohio. But our primary election, 21% last year showed up, even though a lot of what was on the ballot was more impactful to voters. Mm-hmm. And so how do you just combat that maybe lack of awareness of those elections, lack of enthusiasm, even though the issues are still as important or in some cases even more important?
Very true. And if you look at the turnout rates, even within Lucas County, there are some areas in Lucas County where the turnout is always double digits, right? Then there are some areas in Lucas County that, you know, I hope we get 8%. You know, but overall, the 21% in comparison to the number of voters that are here, it can be kind of daunting sometimes because, like I always say, it's like you get ready for this large event, right? Just like you were planning a wedding or something, and you made sure that you had everybody where they needed to be. The venue was set up, the food is set up, the ushers are there, and then three people show up for your wedding, right? And so I look at elections like it's a lot of planning that goes into it. And then, of course, I would love, you know, for the turnout to be higher because I honestly believe, despite the fact of all of the work that goes into it, I'm still of the mindset that your vote is your voice, right? And democracy matters. So it's definitely based upon people, how people feel about the elections and the culture at that time. You can always tell, say, for instance, you have incumbents running.
Right.
And it's mainly incumbents. As you know, a lot of people tend to say, well, they're going to win anyway. And people just won't show up to vote. I have found over the years that, you know, if you have two new contenders or two new people in there, you tend to get more people to show up because more people either are looking for that change or they want to see what the new people they put in are going to actually do. With the gubernatorial election that's coming up, I know that the primary election turnout won't be what I would love it to be because primaries just don't give those type of numbers. But I do believe that in November, you know, once the people that will actually be on the ballot in November have been chosen, people will show up. Some people are more comfortable letting other people choose who their candidates are going to be. And that's the way I say it. I want to tell people when you don't show up to vote, you're letting other people make the choice for you, right? So that's what I try to stress to people when I do voter outreach or talk to people is that, you know, you really don't want to live your life every day where having somebody make all the decisions. Having 20% of the people make the decisions for everything you do or even 8% during some elections, I mean, that just doesn't sit well with me. And I'm hoping that at some point that people start to really think about how these races affect their daily lives.
And a lot of these races can be decided at the margins. I mean, we saw some races recently that were very, very close. And it just goes to show that every vote does, in fact, matter. I know people kind of view that as a cliche, but in some races, especially if it's a more rural part of the county, that single vote can really make a difference.
We've had races in some of the, as you said, rural areas, especially some of the villages, townships, where two votes, you know, separate the winner and the person that does not win. I don't like to say loser. So with the other person. So it is important. Sometimes, you know, the fact that if your taxes are going to go up when you're in some of those areas can be one or two votes, you know, so your vote does definitely matter. And of course, if you live in an area where the population is a little lower, you know, it really matters because, like I said, we've had recounts, mandatory recounts, because the vote totals were so close that one or two votes separated them. So you have to do the recount. Since I've been here, I think I've had three tie votes in all the years that I've been there where they had to do the coin toss and then, you know, come back and declare the winner. So those things definitely can happen.
Yeah, you don't want to be in a position where you're tossing a coin to decide an election. So maybe one way people can avoid that is by voting.
Exactly.
And certainly we see with certain groups, they are more high propensity voters. Speaking about boomers and Gen X voters, more reliably going to the polls. But younger voters, it's kind of surprising that they're not as active in terms of voting, despite the fact they're maybe more focused on the issues. And so how do you recruit younger people not only to vote, but to also work the polls?
That is definitely one of the biggest challenges I have. And as I said, I was in D.C. last week, and one of the things we were talking about, of course, was voting and voting funding and how to get people energized. And people from all across, you know, the country that were there had the same mindset. It's like 25 and under is definitely a huge gap of where we don't have people showing up. And then, you know, one of the groups that was there, a cohort that was there, actually gave us, you know, even more focused numbers on, you know, up to the ages of 40 and breaking it down into the groups. And where do you get these people from? The thing is trying to meet people where they're at, right? So trying to find something that triggers them enough to be able to vote. And that is the most difficult thing. I go to high schools a lot, trying to recruit high school poll workers, and I try to make it interesting for them. You know, we do sample ballots. We'll ask them to vote on their favorite class or their least liked class, or things like, do you think you should be entitled to free lunches, or the, you know, successful, I want to say, media people, just things to interest them. But if you get them to see how their vote matters, right? So I had the principal come down one time and say, you know, whichever you guys choose, that's going to be your lunch for tomorrow, right?
Right.
And then purposely had some people not cast their vote. So now everybody is going to eat pineapple pizza, you know, because they won because only 10% of you decided to vote. So just trying to make them understand that these type of things matter for them, you know, that if you start now, start trying to educate them when they're younger. The most enthusiastic voters, quote unquote, I have are like when I go to elementary schools. You know, though they're, the kids are energized.
They have a lot of opinions.
They have a lot of opinions. And I try to take some of the things from them and, you know, and use it in different spaces that I go to. But it definitely is a challenge. I would say anywhere between 25 to 35 is a definite challenge. And it's not like they don't know what's going on in the world. What I've been told by some within that age, they really don't think that they're, like you said, their voice is going to matter. They believe that, you know, the machine is just going to keep doing what it's doing, and they don't really have a say. And I definitely do not believe that's true. But when you have enough people that do believe it, you know, we get what we're getting now, which is a very low voter turnout. And that's, you know, across the country, you know, with people in that age block.
For sure. And just looking at this year's races, you kind of mentioned how when people are seeing different faces, there can be that new interest because they're thinking, oh, this is something where we're kind of starting fresh and maybe people may have different opinions. And this year we're seeing down the ballot a lot of new faces, or in some cases, familiar faces running for different positions. How do you think that that's going to affect the dynamic of turnout this year?
I think it will positively increase the turnout. And I do believe simply because you have some people that are looking, like you said, because they want to change, right? And just the fact that it's not the person that's there right now may cause them to actually show up to vote. And then you also have, you know, everybody has people that they align themselves with very strongly or very strongly against. And I think especially during the gubernatorial years, we are also looking at, you know, electing some of your state representatives. And depending on the states that you live in and how, you know, how your economy is going in there, how's your housing going, you know, people are really paying more attention to those things now. Even when we get phone calls, we cannot talk about politics whatsoever. So it's funny how when you say you can't have political discussions, then they want to talk to you about, well, can you talk about the price of gas? No, not really. You know,
not your department.
And, right. I can't do that either. But, you know, just what we hear when, you know, when people want to say, I want to vote because, right? And I'm coming to vote because of this. And I'm just glad you want to vote, right? But the reasons, believe me, people are going to tell you what they think. And so just having a listening ear to whatever it's going to take to energize people is what we try to do. No, I cannot make everybody's polling location be in their backyard. It just doesn't happen like that. I wish I could say, you know, that the absentee rules were different than what they are getting changed to. My job is to try to make sure that we inform everyone so that they know the changes that have taken place in reference to absentee voting, in reference to additional ID requirements, so that when you do go to vote, you don't get discouraged, right? Because all it does is take one person to say, you don't have the right thing. You know, whether you're going to get your driver's license or whatever the case may be, if I tell you you don't have the right documents, how apt are you going to be more to leave and come back?
Definitely.
Right? So trying to make sure that when people go to the polls to vote, that they have everything that they need legally so that they can cast their ballot is one of the things that I try to focus on. We put it on our website. You know, I've advertised in multiple papers this year and, you know, just trying to get the information out, because some people only, especially people that only vote in presidential elections. So, and maybe they didn't vote in the last presidential election, you know, so now it's the time is coming to where it's first of all, after four years, they can go on inactive lists. And then after the fifth year, they can be removed. So the other thing I always tell people is check to make sure you're still properly registered. If you know that you only vote in presidentials, check to make sure that you're still properly registered. And if not, make sure that you register properly before the close of registration.
And that outreach is so important because obviously in recent years, a lot of people have been experiencing distrust with the electoral process, a lot of that driven by claims of voter fraud, which data doesn't substantiate at a significant scale. How do you combat the fact that some people have lost trust in the electoral process, even though there are a lot of checks and balances involved, especially at the local level?
I was actually teaching a poll worker class last night. I was assisting. And one of the things that I said to people were, if you're in doubt of how the election process worked, become a poll worker.
You see firsthand.
And you see firsthand everything that goes into it. You see that you have to work in a bipartisan fashion. You see that you have to have Democrats and Republicans there. First of all, for both parties, you know, both parties can have security in knowing that we want your people from your parties to work, because that allows our processes to work better. I always say, you know, first of all, you can become a poll worker. We have things such as public logic and accuracy testing, where people can come watch the machine machines as they're being tested. You know, we put a public notice out for that every election. We may get three people. We may get no people sometimes, but it's available. And I always tell people there's no secrets. I believe transparency is best. I am proud to say, you know, Lucas County last year, the Secretary of State had an award, and it was for Integrity and Transparency Award. And our county was the first county to ever get that award for the state. It wasn't just because of me by any means, but I believe that whatever information we can share with our public, we should do that. Of course, there are some things that are protected. Yes, I get it. But, you know, we spent some time in trying to make sure that our website is updated. So now when people, you know, request their absentee, they can go on our website to see that it was processed, see when it was mailed, you know, see when it was received. You can go on there to look up your elected officials. You can print that information out, you know, putting the information out there so that if you do want it, you can get it. And I can't tell you how to vote. I can't give you autobiographies on the candidates, but I can tell you who the people are. Right. I can tell you what the issues are so you can do your own research. So I do believe that information is key. And trying to provide information takes away some of the mystery that people want to say occurs in election. I agree 100% with you when you talked about voter fraud. You know, we do mandatory audits after every election in the state of Ohio. You know, our audit has never been less than 99.8. So I feel secure that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, you know, and I think that that's important, not just for my staff to feel like they're doing a great job, the poll workers that work at every polling location on election day, but the voters themselves to know that, yeah, you can count on what we're doing because we stand behind it.
And certainly you mentioned earlier that you were in D.C. and looking for resources, because I know one thing that county boards of elections have to do is they have to reach out to state and federal partners in order to get support in certain areas. Mm-hmm. And so what is Lucas County looking for in terms of support, maybe on the state or federal level?
I would say the biggest thing for us support is A, open communication, right? I'm lucky that being a part of the Elections Association that I get to hear about, you know, propose legislation, you know, and also within that working group, we can choose to either support that legislation, oppose that legislation, or we can stay neutral. So I think I'm always looking to try to get a voice, you know, my voice heard and get answers back in reference to why do you want to change this, right? Why do you think it's necessary to add those? So I think having, being able to sit at the table and hold those conversations is the first step. And of course, funding is always an issue. You know, when there's mandates that are out there to either change your equipment or change your forms or whatever the case may be, are these funded mandates? Are these things that I'm going to have to go to the commissioners for?
Or is it going to have to come out of your own pocket?
My own pocket? Or is the state going to give us money? Or is the federal government going to give money? You know, those are the kind of questions that we ask. And because there's so many things that are being proposed to be changed in elections in reference to changing equipment, that it does certain things or don't do certain things, in reference to networking and things of that nature. There are pages and pages and pages of all these different proposals for election reform. Are those going to be funded mandates? And that was one of the questions I was asking. I mean, it's hard to ask us to get all new equipment and throw everything we got, you know, in the garbage, and you're not going to give us the next, you know, $2 million, $3 million, $4 million needed to be able to do that. So that was one of the things that I was really pushing for or holding the conversations for, was that if we're going to be making these changes, we need to make sure that we can fund those things. One of the questions I asked, that if you're going to say everybody has to have a birth certificate, is there going to be a means to people can try to apply to get one for free?
Or will there be a rush of people wanting to get one as a result?
Exactly. So those were the kind of things I wanted to know. Like, okay, this is what you want to do. First of all, why do you want to do it? And then second of all, how are we going to make it happen? And is there going to be funding or assistance for the voters to make that happen?
And certainly there have been ebbs and flows when it comes to just the polarization of our country. But I don't know if there's ever been a time when that polarization has seeped into the electoral process, because we're starting to see more of that. And mm-hmm. So would you say this time is different in terms of people maybe wanting to change how elections are operated?
I can say this. I don't hear as much in reference to change from everyday people, right? From the people who actually, you know, show up to go vote all the time. And I always say this as well, for the people who propose legislation, I ask them, have you ever spent a day or some hours with your Board of Elections office. Have you ever volunteered to be a poll worker? So you can see what they go through, or so you can see all of the steps that are there to ensure that people's votes are cast properly. And I think that would probably be the biggest thing for me, is that a lot of the time, the ones that are pushing for a change or pushing to say, let's make it, you know, add all these extra layers, whatever the case may be, have never actually either witnessed, you know, how elections are run, either by coming into the office. I tell people all the time, even when we do public LNA, it states on there, if you would like a tour after that, please call by this date and this time. Like I said, transparency, you know, so that people know there's nothing to hide, right? So elections become more political. When it becomes more political than election-based, then yes, that's when the problems start. That's when people start saying, I don't trust these things. And so that's something that we try to move away from as much as we can. By countering that, we're providing the information. Is it a complete balance? No, but that's the goal.
And certainly, I think at the local level, it's a lot easier to find trust, just given that poll workers are your neighbors. You may actually be the neighbor of your poll worker in some cases. And so there kind of can be a way for those walls to come down. But just lastly here, looking at how people interpret poll worker trust, have poll workers themselves experienced additional pressures just as a result of this polarization?
I have, when I was doing the poll worker class, I can say I got more questions about what ifs. I got a whole lot of what ifs. What if ICE comes in? What if this person doesn't have a proper ID? What if this person's not a citizen? What if? And the good thing is there are literally written directives to try to push them in the right way. So what we'll say is you don't get to choose that a person's not a citizen because you think so, right? Because on the back of their identification, and we show them, it would say non-citizen on the back of those IDs, right? And I even bought additional magnifying glasses so people could read it. But trying to stress to them that your job as a precinct election official is to try to ensure that the voter can properly cast their ballot, not the opposite, right?
Right.
It's not to keep people from being able to cast their ballot. It's to try to do whatever you can do legally to ensure that they can. You know, and I can say, you know, I have a board that works well together right now, and they always state at the same time, our job is to try to give people access to the ballot and make sure that candidates can get on there when they do everything they're supposed to do versus keep them off. So, I mean, it starts at the top. And because I have a board that supports that, it's easy for me to be able to try to enforce those same things with, you know, my staff, whether you're working at the early vote center or you're working in my absentee department or the warehouse or on election day. We all have to have the same goal, and that's to make democracy happen.
And just switching gears, before we conclude this conversation, I do want to talk about the ways in which people can get informed about preparing to vote, because the Lucas County Board of Elections obviously has resources available. And so what are some ways people can get information about what they'll see on their ballot and potentially if they want to become a poll worker, how they can initiate that process?
So I always state, just go to our website at Lucas County Votes Ohio. And then, and if you forget the exact website, just go to the top at Google and type in Lucas County Board of Elections, and it will take you to our website. On our website, you can, you can look your information up to see where you're supposed to vote at, to make sure your information is properly registered. You can go on there to see who are the current candidates that are elected in your district or your precinct or whatever you're looking for, because, you know, you have district races, you have district races, precinct races, things of that nature. So you can do that on the website as well. And all of the issues are on there. Right now we're in, actually today was the proofing portion of the ballot. So our ballots have to be posted, started last night, like I said, until tomorrow. After that, all of the ballots we uploaded, so you can get a sample ballot and look at it for yourself. So you're not just seeing the issues or just you're physically looking at what your ballot looks like. You know, any other issues that will be on there, whether it's the county has a couple of issues on there, then there's other school district things on there. So you can see what you would actually be voting for and or what you would choose not to vote for, whatever the case may be. But seeing your actual ballot, those sample ballots, I believe helps people. You can go on there, you can print it out, you know, do whatever you choose, study it before you go cast your ballot. But I think that having that there has been a huge benefit for voters.
And I like that you use the word study, because I kind of liken it to studying for a test, seeing what you're going to experience before heading into the booth to vote.
Mm-hmm. And you can take, and I can tell people this, you can take your sample ballot to the polling location with you. You just cannot have it out while you're in line. That's considered at that time campaigning, because you're holding a ballot out. But once you get to your privacy booth or your machine, you can use the sample ballot that you brought with you if you needed to. If you want to pre-fill it out at home or do whatever you needed to do, that option is there for you.
That is wonderful. So definitely you want to do a lot of research before you go out to vote. I know we do a lot of research before we buy an appliance. Elections should get that same level of research. Definitely. And I thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
I thank you for inviting me. And if anybody would still like to be a poll worker, please contact our office. You can even just call 419-213-4001. And we will be running poll worker classes almost every day from now until May 2nd.
Wonderful. Lavera Scott is director of the Lucas County Board of Elections. She's been speaking to me about this year's elections and the ways in which everyday people, like you listening right now, can ensure they go smoothly. I'm Jaden Jefferson. Toledo Works from the Toledo Free Press and WGTE Public Media continues right after this. You're listening to Toledo Works, a production of WGTE Public Media and the Toledo Free Press. I'm Jaden Jefferson, a reporter for the Free Press, who primarily covers politics and government. Joining me now, as we continue our conversation about elections and the people who make them work, is Julie Baumgardner, director of the Wood County Board of Elections. Julie, thanks for coming on Toledo Works.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, this episode's been focusing on just the effort to recruit poll workers. So how are things going in Wood County thus far?
Well, we have just started, so we have just sent out our initial ask for anybody who's already worked for us in previous elections. So we're just waiting for them to get back with us and let us know if they're going to work for us or not. And then after that, we will start hitting it hard to get some new people to come in.
And that's a very important part of this conversation, because obviously a lot of people who are working the polls, they've maybe been doing it for some time and they are experienced doing it, but maybe this election they're choosing to step back. And so there's kind of this rotating door of people who work elections. And so how do you get those new faces to come in?
Well, there are several different ways. We work with the SOS, the Secretary of State's office, very closely. They always, on their website, you can sign up to become a poll worker, and then they send those names to us so we can get those new people that way. We have social media, Facebook, Twitter, all of those, that we also put out a call for poll workers, and then we get a lot of referrals. So people that have worked for us for a while who may no longer want to work for us may give us some names, and so that's the other way that we get brand new people.
Would you say it's a big challenge kind of getting a lot of younger people to get involved in working the polls? Because a lot of people who do work the polls, they're kind of reflective of the electorate, which tends to be a bit older, maybe not a lot of fresh voters who are also working the polls. So is that a challenge?
It can be. We're lucky. We do have BGSU in our community, and they have an initiative. They got some grant money that allows like their sports teams and stuff to do work for us. And so we have been lucky that way. But yes, it is very hard. It's also hard because most people work during the day, especially the younger people. When you retire, that's when you have the time to work the 12-hour long day that we have on election day. So that makes a difference too. But we are lucky because of BGSU.
And of course, a lot of the preparations for elections, no matter the size of those elections, is starting months in advance. And so just looking at the preparations for the primary election in May and the general election in the fall, what are some of the things that poll workers and your team are kind of considering and working through?
Well, the biggest thing is any law changes. So when the law changes, we have to be on top of it. We have to know what to do. We have to change our materials that we give poll workers. Poll workers really don't get into it until training starts. Our training is usually in April. We have several days, morning, evening, afternoon classes, but that's really when the poll workers get involved with us. And so we've already established all the law changes and what we're going to do, and then we roll them out, and then they give us suggestions back about this works, this doesn't work, because every polling location is different. And so the managers are great for us. They really give us a lot of good feedback. So April is about when it's going to start for poll workers.
And when I think about Wood County, certainly it's a community that's very spread out. You have some people who are living in rural areas, some people living in more urbanized areas like Bowling Green. And so given just the sparseness of population, you obviously have some precincts that maybe will require less poll workers than others. And so can it be difficult just to get poll workers at those smaller precincts than maybe those larger ones?
Absolutely, especially like our rural locations, yeah, because we just don't have the people out there, but we still need a number of poll workers out there. So sometimes we do ask if we have enough poll workers in the location that you live next to, we may ask you to travel if you're willing to travel on that day. And some people are. Perrysburg, BG, we have a number of locations we can move people around. But yeah, the southern part of the county, that gets a little trickier. But I will say we have a great bunch of poll workers and they tend to come back and they always bring people with them. So we are very lucky in that way.
For sure. And in my conversation with Director Scott from Lucas County, we had mentioned that there tends to be a larger amount of people that are wanting to work the polls around those bigger elections, those marquee races like the presidential elections. But obviously primaries and just those elections in which state issues are on the ballot, you still need people. And so is there kind of that ebb and flow that happens where people maybe are rushing to work the polls maybe in a presidential race, but not when there's a gubernatorial race?
Absolutely. We had a lot of people for the presidential who called us, just cold called us and asked to work, and we couldn't use them all. And so, yeah, I think even more than the gubernatorial, it's the odd years where the township trustees and the villages and the cities have their candidates on. Those are even more difficult than a year like this. Even though it's not a presidential, we don't have as much buzz. We still get more people for these even year elections than for the odd year. So, yeah, if you really are debating about when we need the most help, it's the odd years.
Definitely. And yeah. Turnout, too, fluctuates as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll have good turnout for this one. The primary, probably not as much, just because it depends on the races and how many of them are contested. And we do not have a lot of issues on our ballots this election. November, we will have a much larger turnout. And so, again, we'll have more poll workers, more equipment, all of that stuff. So, yeah.
And obviously, being an election official, the biggest job is just getting people to show up and to register and obviously to make their voice heard. And so how do you kind of approach that messaging to the community of, hey, there's an election happening. Come out, make your voice heard.
Yeah, that's more difficult. Again, we try to do social media. We do a lot of things on our website and stuff to get people involved. We do programs like this. We've been on TV. We try and go. So anytime anybody asks us to come out, we try and go out. We go to Kiwanis, Masons, all of the civic groups that we can go to. So we do a lot of different things. We also have the schools come in, and some of the high schools even ask us to come out, talk to their students, and then we register them to vote while we're there. So we try to hit as much as we can, and anybody asks, we're going to say yes.
And certainly a number of people have turned 18 and they are now able to vote. I'm one of those people this year. And obviously, it's one thing to get people registered and then to get them to show up to the polls. And so when you are going out to those high schools, how do you kind of incentivize people to go out there and make their voice heard, even if the issue they don't think is as close to them?
We just try and explain how important it is to vote on the people that are making the laws that affect your life. I know 18-year-olds don't always feel it or see it because they're maybe don't have a full-time job, not paying a lot of taxes, don't have property tax and that stuff. But we just try and tell, explain to them how important it is to have your voice heard, how some elections come down to one voter that makes the biggest difference. We do take a voting machine with us to show them how easy it is to try and get them, encourage them to vote. So, and I also want to say that 17-year-olds are also allowed to vote if they're going to be 18 by the general election. So we do encourage 17-year-olds for the primary. They can only vote on candidates, but if they're going to be 18 before the November general election, register to vote. go for a primary, it gets your feet wet, you understand it, you can see who's on the ballot, and you get your voice heard.
And then by the next time you show up to the polls, you're a pro.
Right, right.
And of course, preparation is key, not only on your end, but also on the end of the voter, because sample ballots exist. And so kind of speak to the ways in which people can find those sample ballots and kind of get an idea of what they're going to be voting on before heading to the polls.
Okay. Yeah. So again, you go to our website and you can just Google Wood County Board of Elections or whatever Board of Elections, whatever county right. you live in. You can Google their website. And then we all have our sample ballot out there. And for us, all you need is your last name and your date of birth. You put that in. It will actually show you your polling location, where you're going to go. It'll show you your sample ballot. But you can pull that up. You can print it or you can just view it. And it gives you time to look at those candidates that are going to be on that ballot. And so it'll show you all of the races. You can pick in the primary, since this is a partisan primary, you're going to pick what party you're going to select. So if you just Republican, Democrat, we do have Libertarian this time. And so any of those three, or if you only want to vote on issues, then you pick a nonpartisan. Not all of our locations have partisan or nonpartisan ballots. So if you go in there and you only see the three parties, then you know you don't have any issues. But you go in, you pick what party you think you want to vote with, or you can look at all three of them and decide
right.
if you know what, you know, if you know these people or those people more and you have a feeling that way, pick your party, take a look at your ballot, and then do your research. Go out and look at those candidates and see if they are saying what you believe in and make sure that you align with what they believe.
And certainly I do want to point out for people, this is maybe a smaller change that if they haven't been following Ohio's redistricting process, they may have missed. They may be in a different congressional district. Obviously, Ohio's 9th congressional district covers a large portion of Northwest Ohio. But due to the district shifting in a way, there are some voters in Wood County that may be in a different district. And so how do you kind of make sure people are aware of that before heading to the polls?
So what we do is we do a mailing. So when your district changes, we do mail out cards to let you know you are no longer in the 5th or now you are in the 5th or the 9th, whichever one it is. So our line changed just a little bit for the 9th. It follows mostly Perrysburg City is in the 9th and then Perrysburg Township is not. So that's where the line is. But we do educate voters that way. And again, you can go online and look up your districts and you can see where your district is, or give our office a call. We'll be happy to tell you what district you're in.
For sure. And I was pointing out in the previous segment, obviously, national politics, it's become a lot more polarizing. And elections officials have experienced that because obviously they're facing more pressure at the state and in some cases, or in many cases, at the national level as well. How do you kind of respond to that pressure and ensure that people still trust the process, even when they're constantly hearing not to?
Yeah. So again, education, education, education. So going out, talking to people, when people come into our office and, you know, they are maybe ranting and railing at us about something that they don't like, we just try and explain what the process is. We also have brought people in to be poll workers. We've said, okay, you know, if you don't trust it, why don't you come in and work for us and see what happens on the back end? See how we lock the machines up. See how we test those machines. See what happens at the end of election night when all of the voters go home. See how we transfer those ballots and all of that. So I think education is important. And then just say, hey, come work for us and see what happens in the day, in one day in the life of getting your ballot and getting it counted.
And obviously being a poll worker is a tough job because not only is it the hours and having to constantly be helping people, especially on a busy election day, but just also the pressures that they're facing. And so how do you kind of prepare poll workers, you know, to maybe feel some pressure as they're doing that job?
Yeah. So when we bring them in for training, we will have some mock scenarios sometimes, especially if a law has changed. I know last November we had a big one where we couldn't use our electronic poll books. We had to use our paper poll books. So we brought the poll workers in. We sat them down. We sat them down like they normally do at the table. We brought, you know, people up to pretend to be voters and give names and all of that. So they had to look through those paper books to find those. So we kind of do some role playing and that kind of stuff. And then just again, you know, talking to them, working them through their issues on election day. We are their support. They call us, they have our number, and we have staff there that are going to help them over the phone if we can. We have rovers, so we have individuals that go around and they have a designated number of polling locations, and they go around. And so they help those poll workers get through those difficult items. And we have board members. We've even sent our board members out to go to a polling location if there's somebody difficult there. And we have our board member talk to them and just say, okay, let's let the poll worker do their job. Why don't you come and talk to me and we'll see what we can do for you. So
definitely something you would advise for voters, be patient.
Be patient. Always be patient. We do the best we can to get you in and out as quickly as we can. But if you do have concerns, give us a call. Even on election day, we're busy, but you can always call our office. You can always stop into our office, talk to us, let us know what's going on. And maybe there is an issue that we have to address. We may address it immediately if we can, or at least for the next election, we're going to address that issue and make sure that it doesn't happen again.
And you mentioned the ways in which County Board of Elections employees support one another, but obviously there's that relationship between the county and the state. And so what has that relationship been like, and what are some of the ways in which the state is providing support?
So the state doesn't give a lot of direct, support
right.
on election day because they're fielding other things. But what they do is they watch like social media accounts. They watch to see what's being posted, in comments to make sure that some of that stuff is correct. If they see something that is not correct, they give us a call so that we can address it, get it off our social media post if necessary. They are also the eyes and ears for anything in the news, any bomb threats, anything like that. We've never had any of those. I don't foresee any of that happening. But they're kind of big brother, kind of watching over us, but not really engaged in the every minute detail that we have on election day. But they're out there. We can call them if we need them, but we kind of do our thing. And they do have 88 counties. We all do it a little different. We have to follow the law, but we all have our own little things that we do. So
you would say there's a lot of just local decision-making involved in the election process to kind of keep that trust there and to keep that connection to the community.
Absolutely. And I will say, Wood County is different than Lucas County.
Definitely.
Lucas County is very urban. We're much more rural. And so what Lucas County is going to do may or may not be what we're going to do because it may not work for our voters. And so there are those little differences, big county, little county, medium-sized county. All of those things have an effect on what we do, how we do it, and how we interact with our voters.
And certainly one thing that all 88 of those counties have in common is just the need for resources, because constantly equipment may be needing to be updated or there may be other needs. And so when it comes to maybe needing updates or needing new resources, how do you approach that? Because obviously there's a financial cost, and then of course there can be more in that process.
Sure. We're very lucky in Wood County. Our commissioners are very supportive of us, and our commissioners are the ones that set our budget. They don't run our office, but they set our budget. And when we have gone to them, when we've needed new equipment or something like that, they have always had a discussion with us, and they have always been very supportive. Again, the state also has grants, and so I know a couple of years ago when we replaced our poll pads or our electronic sign-in sheets for Election Day, they gave us money for that. So, the legislator gives us money, so there are some avenues like that. But again, a big shout-out to our commissioners for always supporting us that way.
Yeah, and I also want to talk about the gap just between the primary and general election, because it's a significant amount of time. But in that time, obviously, maybe some lessons can be learned about, maybe things that can be done better, done differently. How do you approach that period in making changes before the general?
So we, on election day, we deploy like problem sheets or suggestion sheets for our poll workers. They write suggestions down. We go through those. We read every single one of those. We write down what their suggestions are, and then we have a discussion about it. We also do what we call a roundtable, where we say, okay, what were the problems that we had on election day? What can we do better? What do we need to change? All of that kind of stuff. But that's the summer for us right now between primary and November. We're also getting a new voter registration system. And so we are also updating things during that time. So it may not always be for election in November. It could just be the support services for our office that we do for those 3 months. But the election cycle is 4 months. So 8 months out of the year, we're busy with the election. So,
and just approaching that issue of just getting the system updated when it comes to helping people register to vote, obviously that's a challenge in its own right. And so kind of when you want to initiate changes like that, how do you start that process?
So we start it by deciding when the best time to do it is, because we can't do it now. We have to have it. And we don't like to do anything in the presidential year. We do try and avoid even the gubernatorial year, just because those elections are watched much closer than some of the other elections. And so we're very mindful of trying not to change anything. You know, the voters are used to something. We don't want to throw something new at them if we don't have to. But we do really look at the calendar and decide when we can do it. And then we work with the vendor to say, look, we can't implement this until July, say. So the voter registration system, we won't implement anything until July. So we've started working on it already. We've started converting all the data, but we will not implement it until July, so that we have a couple of months then to have our hands on it and make sure that it's working the way it should. So any decision like that, new equipment, new software, anything like that, is going to be all based on what the calendar is for that year.
For sure. And obviously, when people are going to the polls, they will notice all the different things that are happening. But a lot happens behind the scenes, too. So what are some things that people maybe don't pick up on, that election workers have to keep in mind, or things that they have to accomplish in order for these elections to run smoothly?
So they have to make sure that they have all the correct ballots, because we do have paper ballots. If somebody wants to request a paper ballot on election day, we have to make sure they're there. So they're back there organizing things. They're making sure that the machines work. So if a printer goes down or something like that, and they may have to do a little maintenance on it, they're doing those things behind the scenes. Even before that, we're testing each and every one of those machines. So in a couple of weeks, we will be bringing in people who are going to do logic and accuracy testing. They touch all 543 of our voting machines, and they touch all 105 of our poll pads. And so they're going to go through, they put an election on, they actually vote every single ballot style that goes through that machine, and then we upload all those results into our mock election. We make sure that those reports are giving us what we voted on. And so we do all of that testing, all of that stuff. We have packing, where we have to pack all of the supplies. And so people come in and they, you know, count locks out that we lock our machines with. They make sure that we have all of our paper, you know, trails, all our lock logs, all of that stuff, all packed up and ready to go in our supply bags. And so they're doing all of those items as well.
Do you think if people were more aware of all of the checking that has to happen before, that they'd be more trusting of elections?
I think so. And like I said before, come work the election, I think that gives you a lot of confidence as well in what's happening and how those machines are working. And, you know, we have a Democrat and a Republican go to a machine to look at it, to fix it. Everything is done two by two. Our office, we've always said, our office is like Noah's Ark. We can't go anywhere unless there's somebody with us. And so we always have a buddy. And so I think when you see that, and you see that one person isn't just walking up to a machine and doing whatever they want to with it, it helps with the confidence.
And you mentioned that in your role, you do have to work with both parties. And so has it gotten harder to do that over the years, easier, or what's been the situation?
Actually, for us, it's been about the same. I mean, even though our office is political, when we walk in the door, politics goes away. We may joke with each other, we may rib each other, you know, from the other side. But when we get right down to it, we both know we have to do the job. It's got to get done. And we're local. We live in your community. We shop in your stores. We live next door to you. We're your neighbor. And we don't want your vote not to count. We don't want to change your vote. We don't want to steal your vote. We want to make sure that how you vote is how we record it. And so just remember, we're local to you and we're here to help you. We're not here to take anything away from you.
And we've mentioned that the experience of being a poll worker can be so valuable. One of the key ways, obviously, is having that transparency and seeing how the process plays out. What do you think are some of the other things that people get out of being a poll worker?
I think they get the community. They meet a lot of people, and they really see how important it is for us to have these elections and to let people vote. So I think it's a great experience. It's a long day, but it's well worth it in the end. I just really think you learn a lot, and I think you meet a lot of great people.
Certainly. And obviously, in your experience working as the director, you're kind of overseeing the whole operation. And so just kind of having that responsibility, how is it like for you?
I love it. I was actually an elected official before I became the director of the Board of Elections. And I actually love the nitty-gritty of it. I love
a stress test.
Yeah, yeah. But I love seeing how the other side works. Yeah, I saw it from a candidate side. I now see it from the other side. And there's a lot involved, but it's fascinating to see how it all works together, how we all coordinate with each other, and how we actually get it all done on election day in 12 hours.
So at the end of those election days, I imagine you're taking a nice deep sigh and letting it all out right then and there, right?
Not really, because the next day we have to bring all the machines back. So we got all the votes back on election night, but now we got to bring all that equipment back. And so you really don't feel the election probably until Thursday after. That's the hardest day. That's the day when you can't get out of bed, but you know you have to. But so the sigh really comes probably Thursday or Friday after election.
So it takes some time.
It does take some time, yeah.
And given just the geography of Lucas County, or Wood County rather, and this is also true for Lucas County too, there are these rural pockets and then there are these urban pockets, meaning that there has to be a lot of travel done throughout the county. And so that means that people may have to wait a bit longer to get results back. And so what would you say to people who are maybe wondering, why aren't results back, given the fact that there's a process happening?
Right. We have to wait for the poll workers to bring everything back. And so, you know, for Wood County, north, south, it's an hour away, no matter which way. East, yeah. West, it's an hour away from BG. So you have to understand this. The polls close at 7:30, but the poll workers then have to account for all the ballots, the paper ballots they've used. They've got to close all those machines. They got to close the poll pads. They got to pack a lot of stuff up before they walk out of there. And so usually the bulk of our results start coming in about 9:30. We do every half hour we have to do a report. And so you will start seeing results coming in. But yes, it does take a little bit of time for us to get those final results because we have to wait for the poll workers. And they still have a job to do after 7:30. So you have to give them some time.
And we've talked a lot about the work of being a poll worker, but how does one actually sign up or at least show that they're interested in becoming one?
So as I said, they can go to the Secretary of State's website. They can fill out a form. They will send that to us. They can call our office. They can email our office. And our poll worker coordinators will reach out and we will contact you and say, hey, we're ready for you. Come work for us.
And definitely this is a message, too, for people who are in a precinct that does not have a lot of people that live there. Definitely to show their interest.
Yes. Anybody who wants to be a poll worker, as long as you're over the age or 17 or older, come. Volunteer if you have the time and you can give it to us, that would be great. And if you can't be a poll worker, maybe you could come and help us do logic and accuracy testing. Maybe you can come and help us pack stuff up if we have that available for you. I mean, so there are some other things that we may possibly be able to do. We have early voting for most of the month of April. We have to have poll workers there too. So, you know, if you have a day you don't want to do it on election day and you don't want to commit to the 12 or 14 hour day on election day, say you're interested in early vote. It's exactly the same as election day. It's just a smaller window. It's usually 8:30 to 4:30 until that last week. You can come out and be an early worker for those. So, you know, there are several opportunities for you to come out and help us out.
And as I would imagine, the pace during early voting is a lot slower than the pace during, you know, election day.
Yeah, unless you work the weekend, that's usually when we're the busiest. But yeah, the pace is slower. So you can talk to people. You can learn how to do it. So if you're not sure about election day because you've never done it before, come out and do a little smaller one where you don't have as many people coming in, or at least it's a steady stream. It's not lines out the door. So, come out for early vote And we will, if we have spots, we'll be more than happy to get you in there.
Yeah, one thing we were covering in our previous segment was just how voters themselves prepare for elections, because you mentioned before that the law can change and there may have to be certain things that they bring or certain changes to how they vote. And so what would you say are the key changes voters should know if they plan on voting in either the primary or general in November?
So probably the biggest thing is the type of ID that changed last year. So make sure you bring driver's license, a passport, or a U.S. military ID. So those are, you have to bring an ID with you. You may have to vote what we call a provisional ballot if your address changed. So say you moved, but you didn't have time to update your registration. You can still vote, but you'll have to vote a provisional ballot. All that is you're going to fill out a form, and you're going to fill out a paper ballot. You're going to stick it in an envelope. It's still going to count. It's all of those things, and it'll update your registration at that time. Same thing for a name change. Say you get married and you change your name, you can do that, and you didn't have time before voter registration closed, you can still change your name. So there are avenues. We always say, even in doubt, you can still vote. We will give you a way to vote, whether that's a regular ballot or a provisional ballot. You'll still be able to have your voice heard. But the biggest thing is probably the IDs. I don't think the voters are going to see anything else with what law changes we've had other than that.
Yeah, and another important point, say, for instance, you're in line when the polls close. You can still vote.
Absolutely. If you're there before 7:30, you're going to be able to vote. It doesn't matter. We are going to stay until that last voter gets all the way through.
And just lastly here, looking at lessons from past elections, obviously every election is different, but from your past experiences, what would you say have been the biggest things you've learned as director?
Well, that's a hard one. just to have patience with people, just to listen to they have a valid point. And even though you may be on the other side, you need to listen to those people. They need to be able to tell you how they're feeling and what they need. You may not be able to do a lot about it, because we are controlled by law, but listen to them and let them have a voice. I think that's the most important thing.
Well, Julie Baumgardner is the director of the Wood County Board of Elections. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that is all for this election-themed edition of Toledo Works, which is a co-production of WGTE Public Media and the Toledo Free Press. This and all past episodes of the show are available online at wgte.org/ToledoWorks, as well as on the recently refreshed WGTE app, as well as our YouTube channel and the NPR app. Toledo Works is also streaming on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. I'm Jaden Jefferson with the Toledo Free Press. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great weekend.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.